Okay, hello. I just posted a link in the room. That link is the link that goes to number 590, which is where we're going to start tonight in the Seven Steps to Awakening. Yeah, that's the link. And I would love to start with, you know, a little bit of silence. But I think what I'll do during the silence is go ahead and play a song. We'll have silence to music. I think the song that I'll play is a song that I was introduced to today here in St. Louis. And the name of the song is Amazing. And the band is One Eskimo. And if you listen to the words, this sounds like someone who has just awakened and is beyond the I am the body belief and is just noticing how amazing that perception is. So here's the song, Amazing by One Eskimo, and we'll just be kind of still while we listen to it.
Thank you.
All right. I will begin reading then, as I mentioned, from the Seven Steps to Awakening with quote number 590. And these quotes right now are coming from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And this is the quote. Actually, this is an extremely brief conversation. So we have a questioner. How does one shape one's character? And then Nisargadatta's answer. By seeing it as it is and being sincerely sorry. This integral seeing, feeling can work miracles. Again, the question was, how does one shape one's character? And the answer, by seeing it as it is and being sincerely sorry. This integral seeing, feeling, and that's a hyphenated word, seeing, feeling, can work miracles. So I'm going to look at my journal and see what I wrote when I contemplated this. And here we go. Do not be afraid of ego. Do not be afraid to look directly at it with awareness, seeing it as it is. Do not be afraid to be honest, completely honest, about the types of thinking ego promotes. As you begin to see ego clearly, look closer. Notice with a sharp eye the nature of ego exactly as it is. Seeing ego clearly, one tires of it. Tiring of ego, one lets go of it. For who would hold on to a pest when it has been seen that the pest has absolutely no value? It's interesting, you know, we talk about the ego, again, as if it's something. As if it's something. But what it really is a thought process. It's just a thinking loop that happens because we give that thinking loop attention. That's really why it happens, because we give that thinking loop attention and belief, and so it continues to happen. And what also happens is that for some reason, I'm not exactly sure why, it just seems to happen, for some reason we identify the idea of bad with ego. And, you know, the idea may look something like, you know, if ego is in me, that means I'm bad. And this is really a very unfortunate association. Because if we make that association that if ego's in me, that means I'm bad, then we will be afraid to look at ego. And it's through the simple looking at ego, the simple watching ego, the simple noticing ego, that, you know, the wisdom part of us realizes ego just, you know, isn't what I want and loses interest in it. And once the interest is lost, the ego just kind of fades away because it's fed by our interest. So if we have associated the idea of bad with the idea of ego, and we're afraid to look and actually see the ego in ourself, if we hide it from ourself, then that means our awareness, which is the healing power, doesn't land on it, and ego continues to thrive. I think A Course in Miracles says something like, ego thrives in darkness. And that's what it means. Darkness would be our unawareness, our not looking. So what one thing that really means for each of us is we need to watch out for the idea that we have that ego means bad. Just kind of watch out for that idea and shine our awareness on that when that shows up. Because, if I think the ego is bad, I won't look at the ego. I'll be afraid to look at the ego because I'll think seeing ego in me means I'm bad, and I don't like that at all. So I won't look at the ego, which means my healing awareness doesn't shine on it, and ego thrives. So again, the question that was asked, let's see, what does it mean in the quote to be sincerely sorry? I think sincerely sorry would be the same as seeing it and realizing that's not what I want. You could say that's not how I want to be. That's not what I want to believe. You know, that's not the experience I want anymore. I would call it, it's a true repentance almost, but it has no guilt in it. It has no guilt in it. It's just seeing, that's just not what I want anymore. it's losing interest in it. I would say being sincerely sorry is synonymous with losing interest. Because again, the reason the ego thrives is because we give it our attention. We give it our attention. And a good example is, pesky desire we have to be right. So if you and I are in some debate, right, I want to be right. And so I keep making my point and making my point and making my point. And what I'm not noticing is that even that desire to be right is really ego, right? And that debating energy is really ego. Because I'm so excited by the potential of being right. I'm so excited to make myself appear right. So I have to realize I don't want to be right anymore. It's just one example that being right is not important to me. I have to realize I don't want to debate anymore. I just don't want to be in those kinds of conversations. True repentance, losing interest in that entire way of being. And as I lose interest in that entire way of being, well, then of course, when the energy starts to rise in me again, because it's a habitual energy, I won't have the interest to follow the energy. And I won't have the interest to get caught up in the energy. And because I'm not following the energy, it will eventually weaken and die because it lives off of my attention, right? Yeah. Hello, Lynn. Welcome back. I'm hoping that at 55 after, Lynn, you'll be available to take the mic and play a song for about 5 minutes while I go get Jan Fraser. So hopefully you'll be available then. Yeah, okay, perfect. Thank you. All right, so again, the question was, how does one shape one's character? Which I think is an interesting question, but the Nisargadatta's answer is by seeing it as it is and being sincerely sorry. This integral seeing feeling can work miracles. And then from the journal, my journal, it says, do not be afraid of ego. Do not be afraid to look directly at it with awareness, seeing it as it is. Do not be afraid to be honest, completely honest, about the types of thinking ego promotes. As you begin to see ego clearly, look closer. Notice with a sharp eye the nature of ego exactly as it is. Seeing ego clearly, one tires of it. Tiring of ego, one lets go of it. For who would hold onto a pest when it has been seen that the pest has absolutely no value? And with that said, I am going to scroll down and click on number 591. And I'll read 591 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. The higher can be had only through freedom from the lower. And this is again Nisargadatta Maharaj speaking. The higher can be had only through freedom from the lower. And when I think of the opposite of freedom, as I read that quote, what comes to mind is addiction. You know, so being addicted to the lower or being addicted to the ego, just, you know, giving it our attention all of the time. And so what this is saying is that as long as we remain addicted to the ego, we aren't aware of the higher way of seeing, the higher way of understanding, the higher way of realizing. That is all kind of blocked, just like blue sky is blocked by storm clouds. And so in order to recognize the higher way, the higher way of seeing, in order to see with God, as some would say, we need to let go of the lower way. We need to let go of that addiction that we have. So let me read the quote again, and then we'll go look at the journal. The higher can be had only through freedom from the lower. All right, 591. Growing tired of ego in one's self can have tremendously freeing effects, because releasing the ties that bind results in freedom. Clinging to those ties keeps one tethered within a prison of one's own making. Growing tired of ego in oneself can have tremendously freeing effects. Now, one thing I want to point out about growing tired of ego, that is not the same thing as judging ego. That is not the same thing as hating ego, right? Growing tired of ego is just a losing interest in it. Like, you know, just losing interest. I remember, you know, we had Bentino here a month ago for our last satsang, and he talked about growing tired as something that always propelled him into his next stage of awakening. He mentioned that when he was very young, I think he was around 16 or so, he was already starting to grow tired of the ego personality. He was already starting to grow tired of it. He recognized it as not freedom. He remembered the freedom of being a young child before the ego personality had really developed, and he longed for that freedom again. So he was already growing tired, and it was this growing tired that propelled him forward into his awakening to awareness. But then he talks about how, you know, of course, awakening to awareness was absolutely wonderful. But then he starts talking about, which amazes a lot of people, how he even started to grow tired of that. And as he grew tired of that particular stage of awakening, that propelled him further into awakening to the absolute, which is beyond awareness. So, you know, he talked about that growing tired, and this is talking about growing tired again. And it's not, again, it's not judging. It's not hating. It's not being disgusted with. It's just growing. I'll tell you a shift that's occurred in me recently that kind of demonstrates the growing tired a little bit. One thing that I have always done and loved in the depth of my heart on this spiritual path is contemplation. In fact, right now we're looking at my contemplation of the seven steps to awakening. And I have always loved contemplation. Well, lately, what started to happen when I sat down to contemplate is that contemplating is starting to have a busy feel to it. Instead of that devotional feel that it had before, it's starting to have a very busy feel to it. And I find that it doesn't uplift me in the way that it used to. And in fact, after contemplating, I can feel a little tired, almost like I'm forcing it now. And some of you probably know, I talked a week ago about how what I was really feeling guided into was meditation. And I even said here in the room, I said, I wonder, I wonder if I'll do it this time. And of course, as soon as I said that, I knew that I would. And so the very next morning, I set up a meditation space in my house, and I began meditating on a daily basis. And what I found as soon as I began meditating was that space of meditating, which is, I don't know what to describe it as, doing nothing, just being, right? That space of meditating was now the space I'm being called to. That was the space that now has in it the same love that the contemplation used to have. So you see, I grew tired. I naturally grew tired of the contemplation and moved into the meditation. But there was no judgment of the contemplation. I did not judge it at all, right? And so growing tired does not at all involve judgment. And so what we're talking about here in this particular quote, growing tired of ego in oneself can have tremendously freeing effects. Because what that really means is that you're starting to naturally move from what you could call one stage to another stage. You're moving from the stage of being really interested in your ego, occupied by your ego quite easily, to a stage of losing interest in your ego and either starting to pay attention to just the beingness or the awareness, or starting to look with curiosity as to what there is to pay attention to, if you don't know that yet, what there is to pay attention to, because the ego itself is something that you're losing interest in. And that interest is going to go somewhere. That attention is going to go somewhere. That awareness is going to go somewhere. So if you're losing interest in the ego, it's going to start looking for where else it can go. So again, 591, growing tired of ego in one's self can have tremendously freeing effects because releasing the ties that bind results in freedom. Clinging to those ties keeps one tethered within a prison of one's own making. And I'm certain that, you know, even if we haven't grown tired of the ego entirely yet, I'm certain we've all experienced growing tired of some aspect of our ego. For instance, many of us have grown tired of gossip, for example. Like there may have been a time when gossip was something we really enjoyed. You know, we participated in it with some kind of, you know, excitement. But then at some point for many of us, you know, we just grew tired of it. You know, it just wasn't something that interested us anymore, and we found ourselves dropping out of it. Another thing that some of us have grown tired of is having opinions. You know, at one time, we were very, very excited to have, you know, maybe political opinions, religious opinions, opinions about what's happening in the news, you know, just opinions about whatever. It gave us a strong sense of self. It made us feel intelligent. It made us feel a part of something. But then at some point, many of us just kind of grow tired of having an opinion. We don't want opinions. Another thing that many of us have grown tired of is debating, you know, getting into spiritual debates, you know, being right about spiritual concepts. You know, that's something many of us have been attracted to in the past. You know, we've participated in Facebook, or we've participated, you know, in the older days in Yahoo groups. But then at some point we just grow tired of that. So we've all experienced growing tired of some aspect of ego. So we know what that feels like. And we also know that beginning to grow tired is the beginning of the end of that. It's, you know, we begin letting go at that point because we lose interest. Lori says, yeah, I don't think I would criticize others if I hadn't done it myself at one point. Now that you say that, I remember gossiping until I felt hurt by someone else's gossip. Yeah, and then that feeling hurt, I guess, was the beginning of your growing tired of gossip, right? So growing tired of something is actually wonderful, because growing tired of it is the beginning of letting go of it. It's the beginning of freedom from it. So again, Nisargadatta Maharaj said, the higher can be had only through freedom from the lower. And the journal says, growing tired of ego in oneself can have tremendously freeing effects, because releasing the ties that bind results in freedom. Clinging to those ties keeps one tethered within a prison of one's own making. So I am going to scroll down and click on number 592. And I will start by reading 592 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is what Nisargadatta Maharaj says. Insanity is universal. Sanity is rare. Yet there is hope. Because the moment we perceive our insanity, we are on the way to sanity. On a very, very similar topic here as the growing tire that we just talked about. You know, I am very, very happy to tell you how right I am and how wrong you are. As long as I, you know, fully believe that and feel fully right about that. But as soon as I start noticing, for example, you know, as soon as I start noticing not only how I feel when I'm in a debate with you, but how it hangs on me after, like after I walk away from the conversation, the ideas of what was said and what I should have said and how I could have said it better and all that is hanging. And if you're a particular person that I debate with and I know I'm going to see you at a particular venue, I might start planning in advance, you know, the conversation, what we're going to say, what you're going to say, what I'm going to say. And at some point, if I start noticing the upset that's in me, the distraction that's in me, the distraction from happiness, the distraction from beauty that's in me, at some point, I may begin to notice that this lust for being right that I have is actually insane. That this lust for being right is not making me happy. You know, this lust for being right is causing me to be worried and concerned and preoccupied with imaginary debate conversations in my mind, not to mention the few that we actually have. But, you know, I'm even more bothered by the imaginary debates than the ones that we actually get into. It's all the conversations I have with myself, you know, about it before and after. Yeah, Lynn has written, idle chatter is tiring. It is dispiriting. Yeah, and you know, just to use the language of this current Nisargadatta quote, it's insane. And so until I see it as insane, I'm going to just keep right on being involved in it. True? But once I see it as insane, that's the beginning of growing tired of it. Nobody wants to be insane. Nobody wants to cause themselves pain. We do it because we're kind of blind, because we're ignorant, in the language of the Hindus. We're ignorant to it. But once we start to see it, and once we start to see it for what it is, insanity, that's the beginning of the end. So again, Nisargadatta says, insanity is universal. Sanity is rare. Yet there is hope, because the moment we perceive our insanity, we are on the way to sanity. So I'm going to read from the journal. The journal says, seeing the senseless, crazy, vicious selfishness of ego is very, very good. When one realizes how utterly insane the ego is and realizes insanity isn't necessary, one drops the chains of ego and walks freely into the light. And that reminds me of a line somewhere in NTI that says something about how the ego is nothing but confusion. And it says that when you see that, of course, that is very good. Because the day that you see that ego is nothing but confusion is the day that you realize you don't have to listen to it anymore. You know, the reason that we listen to ego is because we think, ah, as crazy as this sounds, because we think it's wisdom. You know, when my ego is advising me on what to say to you next time we get into a debate, it's giving me all my, it's planning my next argument. The reason I'm listening to it is because I think that's my wisdom talking. But when I start to see that that is actually insanity, when I start to see that that is tiring, dispiriting, as Lynn has said, then I begin to lose interest in it. I'm not as excited to pay attention to it anymore. When I think it's my wisdom, I pay a lot of attention. When I see it's dispiriting confusion, I start to lose interest. You know, I'm smart enough not to listen to an insane counselor. I only listen to the ego as my counselor when I think it is wisdom. So again, the journal says, seeing the senseless, crazy, vicious selfishness of ego is very, very good. When one realizes how utterly insane the ego is and realizes insanity isn't necessary, one drops the chains of ego and walks freely into the light. Isn't that a wonderful image? Dropping the chains of ego and walking freely into the light. But again, you know, as we started off tonight, one thing that we need to let go of first is associating the idea of ego with the idea of bad. Because if I still have a judgment in my mind that the ego is bad, I'm going to be afraid to see the ego in me, because I'm going to think that means that I'm bad. So we do have to let go of that idea that the ego is bad. Once we let go of the idea that the ego is bad, we'll be able to look honestly, see the ego, grow tired in it, recognizing it for what it is, realizing it's not what we want. True repentance, which results in losing interest, and then it can die away. I'm going to scroll down and click on 593. I'll read 593 from Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, a brief conversation. The questioner says, yet we are afraid of the better and cling to the worse. Nisargadatta says, this is our stupidity, verging on insanity. So again, it sounds like the same type of conversation is continuing here. The questioner says, yet we are afraid of the better. We are afraid of the better. A while ago, that was called the higher. We are afraid of the better and cling to the worse, which while ago was called the lower, right? So we're afraid of the light and we cling to the darkness. We're afraid of the truth and we cling to the ego's sense of self. And Nisargadatta says, this is our stupidity, verging on insanity. And so going to the journal says, clinging to ego is a habit and nothing more. See it as a habit and drop the habit through devoted vigilance and faithful perseverance. I mentioned a while ago that it's an addiction. It's an addiction. We're all very addicted to listening to the ego. And so what a lot of different spiritual practices really give us a means to do is to break this addiction. You know, like one type of spiritual practice is the mantra that came through the teaching of Inner Ramana. I am that I am. If you guys remember how that mantra was described, how we were to use it, we were to say it whenever the idea came into our mind to say it. We were to say it with love and devotion. And we were to rest in the silence that follows the mantra. Right after you say the mantra, there's this little bit of silence that follows, and we were to rest in that silence. And when you're saying the mantra with devotion and resting in the silence that follows the mantra, what you're not doing is listening to the ego chatter. So you see, the mantra is a tool, one of many. The mantra is a tool to help us break our addictive habit of listening to ego. Yesterday, I think it was, maybe Friday, sometime recently, I posted a Eckhart Tolle movie on my Facebook wall. And if you go and you watch that Eckhart Tolle movie, he talks about, in the very beginning, you don't even have to watch the whole thing, you just have to watch the first few minutes. He talks about breathing in order to break that habit. You know, not just breathing like we always do when we're not paying attention to it. But he says that if you watch yourself take a breath, in those moments that you're paying attention to your breath, you are not thinking. So if you consciously do that, you know, several times during the day, whenever the thought comes into your mind to take a breath now, right, and you give your full heartfelt attention to looking at the breath and just watching it while you do an inhale and an exhale, during that period of time, you're taking a break from the thinking. And so breathing becomes a tool to help you break the addiction to the mind. And of course, when Bentino was here a month ago, he talked about taking awareness breaks throughout the day, where you just, you know, for 3 to 5 seconds, that's what he would say, 3 to 5 seconds, you just rest in awareness without thought. You just stop. And you pay attention to not the thought, not what you're hearing, not what you're seeing, right? But you pay attention to the awareness that hears, the awareness that sees. And you do it for just 3 to 5 seconds. Why don't we go ahead and just do that now? And for those of you who don't know how to pay attention to the awareness, start by listening to my voice. I'll go ahead and talk for a second before I stop. Listen to my voice, let go of all of your thinking, and just listen to what I'm saying. And then stop and look. What is hearing my voice? Don't say my ears, that's mental. Just look. What is hearing my voice? What is it that's aware of my voice? And then focus on that for 3 to 5 seconds. And then come back, you know. And if you just do that, just stop and pause, what you're really doing is you're pausing your thinking. You're putting your thinking on pause while you're looking at awareness. So again, that helps to break that addiction to thinking. So there are lots of spiritual tools. I mean, those were just a few. But there are lots of spiritual tools that have the purpose of helping us break our addiction to thinking. So again, the journal entry for 593 says, clinging to ego is a habit and nothing more. See it as a habit and drop the habit. Drop the habit through devoted vigilance and faithful perseverance. That's another thing, is sometimes people do try this stuff a little bit. And, you know, they try it for a little bit and they feel like they're not getting results. That's their own judgment. They feel like nothing's changing, and then they just lose interest in the practice and just go back to the addiction. The addiction being, of course, listening to ego all the time. You know, one thing I really like to remember is Jesus saying, seek and ye shall find. You know, seek and ye shall find. If there doesn't appear in your judgment to be immediate results, if you really want to let go of the addiction to thinking, keep trying. You know, and I think that we will all basically try to an equal degree that we want it. You know, so if you want it a little, you might try a little. If you want it a lot, you may try a lot, be more vigilant and practice longer, right? And if you want it like your life depends on it, the amount of attention you're going to give to that practice of breaking that habit will be tremendous. And in fact, this is why Michael Langford tells us that, you know, one of the most wonderful things that we can do is focus on our desire for liberation, I think he calls it. Our intense desire for liberation. Isn't that it, Barb? You're the one that always helps me when I can't remember those exact words. Our intense desire for liberation. And as that intense desire for liberation becomes bigger and bigger and bigger in us, our seeking becomes more vigilant. All my little alarms are going off around me now, telling me that pretty soon it's going to be time to go get Jan Fraser. So, oh, and Barb was just talking about that this morning, yeah. Yeah, well, that's what we do in this room, right? We all talk about the same thing, even though we didn't plan it. It's like some kind of a secret planning committee came in our sleep and told us all what we were going to talk about in the room tomorrow, and then we unconsciously come in and we all talk about the same thing. That's wonderful how that works out. But again, 593 says, clinging to ego is a habit and nothing more. See it as a habit and drop the habit through devoted vigilance and faithful perseverance. And again, we will do that when we want it bad enough. We will do that when we want it bad enough. And if we want to want it bad enough, then we can work on, you know, the desire for freedom, the intense desire for liberation, the desire to know truth, desire to know thyself. By increasing that desire, we will then increase our willingness to break the addiction to mind. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to scroll down and click on 594. I feel like I'm just moving right along tonight. Usually, if you come to these seven steps teachings, usually I only cover two to three in a night. And boy, tonight it feels like we're just whizzing right along and covering several of them. But, you know, that's what it is. It is what it is, as they say. So 594 says, 594 says, the false self wants to continue pleasantly. That's a very interesting statement. The false self wants to continue pleasantly. So, you know, many, many people start the spiritual path because of some type of suffering. And what they want is to be free of suffering. And what Nisargadatta is telling us is that, you know, it is true that the false self wants to be free of suffering, but it wants to continue. It wants to continue in a state of pleasantness. And Lori is saying, I want to continue pleasantly, happily. Yeah, that's what it's saying. And of course, you know, Nisargadatta Maharaj is very, very focused. You know, he's focused on helping us to awaken to our true self. To awaken to our true self. So remember, he's teaching us to look at the ego so that we can, you know, see it for what it is and lose interest in it. He even wants us to see that ego desire to continue pleasantly or continue happily. And he wants us to look at that and question that. And the interesting thing is if you look at that and you really question that, what you'll realize is that's not possible. That's not possible. The ego, the happiest ego in the world, is always conditionally happy. So the ego is happy because my marriage is going well, I have enough money, my children are healthy and, you know, having a good life, and, you know, everything is going my way. You know, everything is going my way. I'm happy. But anybody who's paid any attention to life in this world at all knows there's one thing we can count on. Things change, and rugs, as they say, get pulled out from under us at any time. Something happens. Somebody gets cancer. Somebody's in a car accident. The stock market crashes, right? Something happens. And so the ego may be able to go along pleasantly for a time, but the ego cannot bring lasting happiness because the ego does not know unconditional happiness. The ego's happiness is always conditional. So we need to look at that and notice that, you know, as sweet as a goal as that sounds, to be a happy me, it's not possible. And we need to see that clearly. And when we realize that that's not possible, then we become more ready to actually let go of me. Let go of me, the one I think I am. And if we're going to awaken to our natural happiness, we have to let go of me. So again, Nisargadatta says, the false self wants to continue pleasantly. He wants us to look at that tendency we have in ourselves to want to stay me, but be a happy me. He wants us to look at that and question that. So I'm going to go to the journal and I'm going to read 594 in the journal. There is a desire for freedom, but this desire must be looked at carefully to make sure it is not a trick. The ego desires happiness for the self. Although this idea can be completely alluring, it can never be fully accomplished. Watch carefully for this idea. It is better to seek truth knowing one does not know what truth is. And I have talked to people before who said, you know, one reason they don't aspire to truth is because they don't know what truth is. And if we wait until we know what truth is to aspire to truth, we will never aspire to truth. Because the only way to really know what truth is to go ahead and take the big leap and awaken to it, right? So this is saying that at some point we need to get ready for that willingness. Yeah, the mystery Barb is saying. We need to have that willingness to awaken to the mystery, awaken to truth, even though we don't know what it is. For some people, that's just a step they're not ready for yet, and I understand that. Yeah, that leap of faith. So we, again, you know, it looks like we're talking about being really honest with ourselves right now. And again, don't forget, we can't equate the ego with bad. That's an incorrect idea that the ego is bad. So first, let's just get rid of that idea. Just because there's ego in me doesn't mean I'm bad. That's a false statement. Incorrect conclusion. But look and see, you know, am I really still just trying to achieve a happy self, a content self? And am I willing to see that although the self can be happy for a time, when all of the conditions are just right, that at some point things are going to change inevitably in some way, and then that happy self will no longer be happy? Am I willing to see that? And then am I willing to start increasing that intense desire for liberation so much that I want truth even though I don't know what truth is? Let me read this one more time, and then I will turn the mic over to Lynn, and I'll go get Jan Fraser. We'll see what she has to say. It's number 594 in the journal. There is a desire for freedom, but this desire must be looked at carefully to make sure it is not a trick. The ego desires happiness for the self. Although this idea can be completely alluring, it can never be fully accomplished. Watch carefully for this idea. It is better to seek truth knowing one does not know what truth is.